Hey everyone, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to News Coup with Public Herald.
One does not necessarily allow the state to define what is legal. Now, the state has the power to enforce a certain concept of what is legal, but power doesn't imply justice or correctness even.
Throughout American history, the political leaders have always exhorted the American people to be nice and quiet and leave things to them. But when very serious evils confronted the American people, they had to go beyond the congressmen and the senators, and they had to commit civil disobedience, and they had even to break the law.
This is News Coup, a Public Herald Studios production where we overthrow the status quo. I'm your host, Joshua Pabanik, and today is episode 20 and part 2 in the Nipotes Permit series at Public Herald. The title of today's story is, quote, "I Turned Blue," quote, "Workers Share Horrifying Experiences Treating Fracking Wastewater." Episode 20 circles us back to one of the very first episodes of News Coup, which was on a company named Eureka Resources. This company has been highlighted by the state as one of the successful examples of how you can treat fracking wastewater. However, in our investigation in that first episode, we found a lot of worker complaints that existed about the management of the company, about how clean it was at the facility, and just overall people's bad experiences trying to have a job there. And then this year, as we were working on part two for the Nipotes story, we got contacted by a worker at Eureka who suffered an injury and was exposed to the radioactive fracking wastewater there. This was back in August of this year. And since then, we've been contacted by 5 total workers, the last one being just as recently as a few weeks ago. So for this piece, we're going to hear in large part the testimony of one of these workers about this facility and what happened to them there. And what are the details about how workers are getting treated when they try to bring concerns to their bosses, and how does that translate into accountability at the state? Now, this is one of the first times anyone's ever shared stories like this. We've heard from people in the oil and gas field who truck wastewater around, who work on well pads, but never someone specifically within these treatment centers. So this is going to be the first of its kind story that hopefully we'll begin to correct some of these wrongdoings that are happening at these places. And with that, we'll hand this mic off to Eric Stepp, who was one of the first workers to reach out to Public Herald about what happened to them at Eureka Resources.
I got seriously dizzy, and I felt like I was vibrating, and everything turned blue.
Eric Stepp tells Public Herald, recalling a recent injury he incurred while working as a shift leader for a small crew treating oil and gas fracking wastewater at Eureka Resources, an environmental solutions company based in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Over the past 6 months, Public Herald has been contacted by 4 additional Eureka workers who are for the first time sharing their stories about the dangers of treating fracking wastewater. Across Pennsylvania, there is a system of facilities that takes liquid waste from fracking sites and theoretically cleans it, stripping out all harmful contaminants before discharging to waterways. However, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection's 2016 TNORM study data indicates that these treatment facilities are often not removing even half, or in some cases, any radioactivity before fracking waste is discharged into rivers. This is something Public Herald reported on extensively in 2022. To see those stories, you can go to publicherald.org/TNORM and read through the DEP study and what it is that we gleaned out of that study after we were able to unearth the names of the companies that were attached to each piece of data in that study. The industrial companies primarily guilty of this practice are centralized waste treatment facilities, or CWTs. These facilities are owned by private companies such as Eureka Resources and are permitted by the state and federal government to treat and clean fracking waste in-house. In reality, most CWTs are not doing a proper job. So they're failing on two counts. They're not eliminating radioactivity from the waste, and in some cases, they're making the waste hotter. In January, Public Herald reported that DEP's own data reveals Eureka's treatment process only removed about 9% of radium from the oil and gas wastewater it processed at its facility in Williamsport. At Eureka's Williamsport facility, where 48-year-old Eric Stepp was hired, wastewater has entered the treatment system hot at an average of 9,600 picocuries per liter of combined radium based on the DEP study. After being treated, wastewater tested was only marginally less radioactive at an average of 8,800 picocuries of radium. These results are a far cry from Eureka's pure water claims, let alone the federal drinking water limit of 5 picocuries per liter. What the public has yet to hear is what's happening to workers in the CWT facilities. When it comes to oil and gas radioactivity, which regulators call technologically enhanced, naturally occurring radioactive material, known as TNORM, the EPA itself presents a daunting message. It says, quote, "Although EPA and others working on the problem have already learned a great deal about TNORM, we still do not completely understand all the potential radiation exposure risks it presents to humans and the environment," end quote. This report, as evidenced through Eric Stepp's experience, is one of the first published accounts of those risks inside a treatment facility.
I got hired at Eureka Resources. I got a call from a guy I worked with, not directly at my previous job, but he was a supervisor for maintenance. And I had left Kellogg's after 8 years, and he called me and hired me down here at Eureka and painted quite a pretty picture. And I had high hopes for the place. But man, I had no idea what kind of a mess I was getting myself into and what kind of dangerous work environment. I'm supposed to report safety issues. There's no safety, nothing safety is, there's no safety committee. They talk about it, but it never happens. Cause nobody wants to do it, because if you talk about safety, you get blackballed. We had a spill on Thursday and I'm still recovering from it. I got exposed to carbon monoxide, and I think I also got exposed to some other things, but it hasn't been able to be tested. I'm pretty sure I got exposed to methanol, but the hospital didn't have the means to test me properly for it. And as I was cleaning up this mess, there was four of us all together, I believe, that were cleaning it up, and it was probably 100 gallons of frack water and oil and sludge and whatever else. And it came out of our one pit and came into containment. But of course, nothing works in this place. The drain that's supposed to get this, in case of a spill out of these pits, it's supposed to go down this drain and into this pipe, and then a pump's supposed to hit it and pump it into another safe area. Well, of course, the pump doesn't work because the pipe is clogged. So this is like the third spill we've had in 3 weeks just in this area, because everything is so full and they keep shoving more trucks down our throat. So we got to make every little bit of space possible that we can. And we say, you know, if we're going to do this, to our bosses, that we're going to risk spilling something. And they say, do it. We do it. Sure enough, there's a spill. So we have this spill and we're squeegeeing it up. And I get down with a hose because the drainage system doesn't work. So I'm using a diaphragm pump. And I'm just crouched down over the drain with a 2-inch hose, just as my coworkers and my plant manager squeegee everything towards me, and I'm sucking it up. And we're outside, mind you. But I'm right down over top of this stuff, and I get a whiff of it, and it messes me up. I got seriously dizzy, and my limbs got, I felt like I was vibrating and everything turned blue. Like everything I was looking at was bluish, had a bluish hue to it. So I got up and I walked over to a post and leaned up against it with my head down. I don't know how long I was there, but I felt awful. And my coworker Dalton comes over to me and asks me if I'm all right. And I look up at him. I said, no. And that's when I noticed everything was blue. And I said, you're blue. And he said, what? He goes, dude, you look awful. And I said, I need to sit down. He said, do you want me to take you to the hospital? I said, yes. So I sat down right there on a stack of aluminum. It's like aluminum siding or something. I don't even know why it's there, but I was sitting on it. And as Dalton said that to me, he's trying to get me to say, take me to the hospital. My plant manager comes over to me, Chad, and talks me out of it, or tries to talk me out of going to the hospital. He says, just lay down right there and get some fresh air. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure I was at death's door. If I wouldn't have went and got oxygen and got help, I would have been in bad, bad shape. And he just said, lay down right there and get some air. Didn't even care about my health or my safety. Total disregard for it. All he cared about was the mess. My friend Dalton insisted, like, dude, I got to take you to the hospital. Next thing I know, him and my other friend draped me over their shoulders because I'm like a wet noodle. They draped me over their shoulders, put me in the company truck, and Dalton takes me to the emergency room where they take me in, give me a room. And I was there for half a day. This was at like 11:30, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, or late morning, or noon. And I'm there for the rest of the day. And they gave me oxygen. They tested my blood. And while I'm there with my wife and son, not in my right mind, completely out of it, I felt totally intoxicated. My limbs were vibrating. My tongue was numb. My lips were numb. I could taste it on my lips, whatever it was that, and this is regular, like every day I can taste whatever I'm breathing, H2S and whatever else is in there on my lips. Finally I went home and, I'm still messed up from it. I still have pain in my chest, tightness, short of breath, tightness in my head. I can't focus. I'm just wiped out. Like I'm sleeping like every couple hours. I'll sleep for a couple hours. And I got to go see a pulmonary specialist. I followed up with my family doctor the other day. She wants me to go see a pulmonary specialist here. I'm just waiting for him to call me and tell me when I'm going. It's not good, man. And previously, two of my coworkers who haven't been there long, they've been there. I've been there 8 months. They've only been there like a month or two at the most. They've been sick already. And they're, you know, no big deal. Like, just go see the doctor, come on back, or go home if you need to. Come on back when you feel better. So that's most recent. But the work environment that we're dealing with, as soon as I get there, I find out through a coworker that at the other plant in Wysox at Standing Stone, a man was flash boiled because of faulty repairs, and the same stuff that I'm working around every single day at the it's called a Nomad. It's a big distiller and it separates the brine and the water. This guy got flash boiled to where his skin melted off of him like leather hanging, and had to drive him a half hour to a hospital because they're out in the middle of nowhere, and he's in agonizing pain and he ends up dying. Well, we have narrowly avoided situations like that at Second Street, where expansion joints have burst because this thing, when I got there, I walked into everything has been neglected for I don't even know how long. And now everybody that has been there since I started and who got hired since I've been there, we've all been like maintenance guys. I'm not even a maintenance guy. We've all been forced to do maintenance because they won't hire somebody else to professionals to come in and fix the stuff properly and update the equipment. They just keep using old equipment, ragtag bolts and parts. Like not even the right bolts to put these things together. Everything leaks. Oil leaks out of the Nomad engine, which is a giant 12-cylinder engine. It's called a walk-a-saw. Oil leaks out of the blower. There's a 10,000-pound blower that leaks hydraulic fluid. We have to constantly, on a daily basis, daily and nightly, we're going through thousands and thousands of dollars of hydraulic fluid by the 5-gallon bucket. And it's going somewhere. It's leaking out, and then there's a lot of it that is going into the distillate that goes into a different tank and then gets sent out into the watershed. And I was told when I realized that oil was going out of this place, was going into our distillate water, which is supposed to be pure distilled water, which it's not. I was told I kind of got my ass ripped for it, by my plant manager. You're not supposed to, don't you ever say that there's oil in the distillate. I'm like, but there is oil in the distillate. What do you mean? Don't talk about it. We don't talk about that. Don't you ever talk about that. Then he says, this is to my face. Then he says, there's always going to be a little oil in the distillate, but we don't talk about that. Don't ever tell anybody that. I'm like, okay, this is bad, but whatever you say, boss.
Eureka is not alone in negligent oversight. Public Herald's 2022 report exposed how there's a systemic problem with NPD's permits requiring regulatory oversight for facilities to discharge into waterways. Eureka's permit is one of 10,494 total active NPD's permitted facilities in Pennsylvania. Provided by the EPA and DEP, NPD's permits fall under the Clean Water Act. They originally aimed to eliminate, quote, the discharge of pollution into navigable waterways by 1985, end quote. Unfortunately, instead of ending the pollution to waterways, the NPD's permitting system actually prolongs it. In the case of Eureka, the company claims to, quote, cleanse the fracking waste in order to discharge the, quoted, de-wasted water to the Williamsport Sanitary Authority Central, a publicly owned treatment works, which also uses a NPD's permit to discharge treated sewage effluent to the Susquehanna River. However, radium, a radioactive component of T-Norm that's water-soluble, is not a required part of testing and monitoring under the federal NPD's program. Currently, the NPD's permitting system obfuscates and legalizes radioactive pollution by not explicitly limiting the amount of T-Norm that facilities like Eureka Resources can discharge to waterways. But the federal government gives states the authority to place additional limits on pollutants above and beyond federal standards. This includes limits on radium, which is a carcinogenic radioactive element in almost all oil and gas waste. Despite this threat, DEP has not set a limit for POTWs on the amount of radium that can be dumped into waterways. Since its founding in 2008, Eureka Resources has crafted an image as a company that breaks industry molds. It lauds itself as having blazed the trail for fracking wastewater treatment, and its vice president of engineering told Public Herald in 2018, quote, it's all focused on, you know, generating the cleanest product that can be used for as many things as possible, end quote. Eureka operates two fracking waste facilities in the state with NPDES permits, one in Williamsport in Lycoming County, and another in Standing Stone in Bradford County. The one in Standing Stone, where Eric mentioned that worker Jeremy Lanzo died from a mechanical failure, DEP failed to include radium limits in Eureka's NPDES discharge permit. There, Eureka discharges directly to Tawanda Creek, a tributary of the Susquehanna River. Eric's story graphically illustrates what Public Herald has been reporting since 2018, that NPDES permits are sending radioactive fracking waste into Pennsylvania waterways, albeit with state and federal approval through NPDES permits. Counter to claims by Eureka, DEP's 2016 T-Norm study found that discharges at the facility have tested positive for high amounts of radium. Further supporting Eureka's negligence, Eric Stepp states that he has never witnessed testing for radioactivity in the effluent in the 8 months he's been working with the company. And no one in the company has explained the radiation risks associated with the fracking wastewater. When it comes to DEP failing to limit Eureka's radium discharge to waterways, Senator Katie Muth told Public Herald in August 2022, quote, "I think it's a criminal act of the government to not require that. That's gross negligence," end quote.
And I heard you describe, you know, much of what's happened, and what I have not heard you describe is any kind of mention about radiation or radiation monitoring. So can you talk about that and tell me what it is that you're doing to either monitor for trucks coming in? Is it effective at all? Can you tell me what you're doing for
radiation? Not much, if anything. Nope. We have no detectors for any of that stuff. So we have one.
If a truck comes in, you have nothing to look at? I thought you guys had a gate system to look at.
We have one little, I guess you would call it a Geiger counter or a meter, a radiation meter. And nobody that, except for the few guys left that have been there for a while, have been properly trained on it. We don't have any specific training to use this device to properly test the trucks, but nobody's been properly trained with that radiation meter. I certainly haven't. I was briefed on it once, right when I started, but I would not even come close to calling that any type of training. But every time we talk about safety, real safety issues, we get blackballed and we get mocked and we get targeted and treated like shit. I mean, these are just some of the things that go on, like these expansion joints that have blown. They've burst scalding hot water and chemicals bursting out of this stuff. And thank God nobody was there at the time. This just so happened to burst. This happened three times, I think, since I've been there that I know of, where people frequent, because we have to go back while this death machine is running. And we have to add engine oil. We have to add hydraulic oil every couple hours because it's so shoddy and leaks and it's just band-aided up. While we're doing this in a completely dangerous area, we're getting dripped upon by scalding hot water. I've been burned on my face. I've been burned on my shoulders frequently, on my arms. And these things have, like, I say a prayer before every time I go under this thing, please God protect me. And he's answered my prayers because they have burst and I have not been there. And thankfully nobody else has either, but sooner than later, somebody's going to get killed in this place. Just since Thursday, I thought that Harry Fulmer, who was my plant manager, now he's the VP of maintenance. I thought he was my friend and I thought he cared about me. And Chad Snyder, who took his place and is now the plant manager. I worked with him for years before. Thought he cared about me. Nope. Neither of them have contacted me to even ask me if I'm alive, if I'm okay, when I'm coming back to work. They don't even care. Instead, I heard from a close friend at work, and he's ready to walk out of that place because of what was said, that Harry said, sounds like sabotage, suggesting that I'm for some reason trying to sabotage the company. Not worried that I almost died, that I got poisoned by carbon monoxide. It crushed me. So I'm not keeping my mouth shut anymore. This place needs to be dealt with because human life is completely disregarded in this place. And just the other day, you could see H2S floating in a cloud through the air. Oh, just don't go over there. That was their response. Also, OSHA has been contacted more than once. And they posted the letter from OSHA of what needed to be corrected. And they had 10 days to correct it and respond by letter. So this is what blows my mind. I don't understand OSHA's quote unquote regulations, but they were allowing, it was good enough for them to hear back from one of the managers that they corrected on their word alone that they corrected these mistakes or these safety issues. And that was good enough for them. I read the response letter that they sent back to OSHA, and Harry Fulmer was the one that signed it and wrote the responses. There's a few in there that I saw where I can positively say they were bold-faced lies. And that's good enough for OSHA. They should be coming in there and going through that place with a fine-tooth comb. I mean, as soon as you walk into the place, you're going to start seeing crazy safety hazards and major codes violations, and from top to bottom, left to right, there's nothing safe about the place.
When Eric returned to work 1 month after his injury, he was brought into the plant manager's office and fired. That will do it for this story. Stay tuned to the next story, where we bring in three additional workers at Eureka Resources and break down what's happening during jobs that are occurring in that facility. For more stories like this one at Public Herald, you can go to our complete series on TNorm at publicherald.org/TNorm. There you'll find maps of how this is happening throughout the state of Pennsylvania, where it's getting out of landfills into leachate to POTW plants, where it's going with the CWTs and all the other types of facilities that are discharging into Pennsylvania waterways. And I should note that although Josh Shapiro's office was made aware of these issues from meetings with Public Herald back in 2017, and that a criminal investigation began on this leachate problem and this TNorm problem in the state of Pennsylvania, that has not stopped Josh Shapiro, as he's become governor, from investing more money into risky businesses that are again claiming to do things that Eureka is claiming to do, but in fact are creating an effluent that's contaminated with radioactive waste. This just most recently occurred when the governor's office gave out $6.1 million to Epiphany Solutions, a company that we wrote about who tried to build a plant along the Allegheny River that could have compromised the Seneca Nation's drinking water. So what we can see from our desk is that there's a serious lack of accountability occurring when it comes to radioactivity across the state of Pennsylvania. And not only that, but that investments are being made by the government to advance this technology without fixing any of the problems that we've been reporting on over the last 5 years. So our team is going to continue to focus on the TNARM work in 2024 until something is done about this issue. We'll have more stories coming out from whistleblowers about the trafficking of TNARM across the state. And we're doing much of that because of support from the public, those that have signed up to our Patreon at patreon.com/publicherald. We thank all of you for doing that. It's your contributions that have helped us publish these stories in 2023 and will carry us into 2024 to do more work. And we also thank the Park Foundation, who has contributed to make this work possible. Don't forget to follow this podcast on any of your favorite podcast channels. And you can subscribe to Public Herald's newsletter by going to publicherald.org. This story included contributions from editor Mitch Rainey and from photojournalist Stephen Rubin. And I am the author of this whistleblower series that we're putting out. And if you feel that you have a story to tell Public Herald, if you're listening to this, if you feel you've been wronged in the industry, feel free to contact us. It's always best if you're trying to protect yourself and protect your anonymity to do that through Proton Mail. You can sign up with an account there, be anonymous, send us information that way. Or you can find me on Signal at 419-202-8503. That's the safest way to communicate with us via text or over the phone. And I look forward to sharing more investigations that are coming from Public Herald. And with that, we'll see you guys at the next story.